Today, I had an excellent conversation with certified dating coach Damona Hoffman. Damona has been coaching singles on how to find love online and offline for over 15 years. She is a regular cast member of The Drew Barrymore Show and a frequent contributor to The Washington Post, The LA Times, and Access Hollywood. Today, we talk about her newest book, F the Fairy Tale, Rewrite the Dating Myths and Live Your Own Love Story. Dating has changed dramatically over the last 10 years, and Damona's book breaks down prevailing dating myths many people are still stuck on. She emphasizes the four pillars of strong relationships and gives tools for navigating online and in real life dating today. I learned so much from Damona. I love every conversation that I have with her, and I hope that today's conversation helps you in your dating life too.
Welcome to Let's Talk Love, the podcast that brings you real talk, fresh ideas, and expert insights every week. Our guests are the most trusted voices in love and relationships, and they're here for you with tools, information, and friendly advice to help you expand the ways you love, relate, and communicate. We tackle the big questions, not shying away from the complex, the messy, the awkward, and the joyful parts of relationships. I'm your host, Robin Ducharme. Now, let's talk love.
Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Love. Today we're going to be talking all about love and dating and relationships with dating coach Damona Hoffman. Damona, thank you for being with us again.
Oh, it's great to see you. Great to be with you.
It's always the best. I love your energy, and you just come with so much wisdom and like all the tips that we need to navigate this very changing dating landscape. I'm in it. I'm full bore in it these days. And I'm like, oh boy, I'm gonna soak in all of the stuff today, Damona.
I will give you everything I have over the last 17 plus years of dating coaching that I've been tracking it, because it's an interesting time right now, isn't it?
it's a very interesting time. I loved your book. Okay, we're gonna talk a lot about this. Your book called F the Fairy Tale. I love it. And we did a little podcast or an IG episode about this last week. And today we're going to dive into the meat of in this book, because I was preparing for this podcast and my best friend Kirsten and I, we work on all the podcasts together. We read the books. We talk about it all. What did we learn? What were our biggest takeaways? And we both agreed. We're like, okay, we're going to get through a lot of what we want to talk about, but it's like scratching the surface of actually what's in this book. Because it's full. It's so full of a lot that people need. I hope they all read it, because what we're going to talk about today is just a little bit of it.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. It was a labor of love, Robin.
I'm sure.
It took about 3 years for this to come from concept to reality. So I really tried to infuse a lot of the questions that I've gotten from my listeners on Dates and Mates over the last 11 years that I've been doing that show, yeah. All of the experiences that my clients have been through, the ups and downs, the frustrations, the dating burnout, everything that I know people are experiencing right now, and to really leave people with a sense of hope and a sense of clarity, ultimately, that a lot of this is more within our control than we realize. And I just want people to feel empowered about dating rather than, you know, hopeless or helpless.
Yes. So you named the book F the Fairy Tale. Tell us about that. Let's just start there, okay? Because this is based on changing our mindsets around dating, about relationships in general. And a lot of that, so much of that has to do with our mindset and our belief systems around all this.
Completely. And you get it, Robin. Like, you get the title. A lot of people think when they hear F the Fairy Tale, they think I'm saying F love. Like, forget it. You don't need it. It's quite the opposite. It's saying F those stories that you've heard that were passed down to you from prior generations, from society, from rom-coms, from fairy tales. F that. And it's really the subtitle, Rewrite the Dating Myths and Live Your Own Love Story, that I want people to walk away from. So F the Fairy Tale gets them in the door because they're like, yeah, yeah, that's how I'm feeling right now. But it's really the transformation is all in that rewriting the stories and not accepting the stories that have been spoon-fed to us our whole lives.
Yes. So dating has changed a lot. And now we're in this world of online dating. And I know there's people that are going to be like, I do not want to do it. I refuse. And okay, we're going to get into that. But I really, you know, we know it is dating, online dating, you do say is dating. So let's just like take that all out, right? Because dating is dating. A lot of people are meeting their mate online, but let's just start there.
Yeah. I feel a lot of frustration around dating and we're all kind of looking for whose fault is it? Like I fully acknowledge dating has changed and dating is not easy today. I don't know that it was ever easy, but it's really, there are a lot more complicating factors today to navigating through dating. And I feel like we're looking for whose fault is it? Is it the rom-com's fault? Is it my friend's fault? Is it my ex's fault? It's the dating app's fault. It's the dating app's fault.
Yes, for sure it is. It's the app's.
Right. Yeah. And we're making the apps do a lot of the work for us. I mean, even just this lawsuit of people suing dating apps for being addictive. It's like, okay, all right, let's take some personal responsibility ourselves because this is what we wanted. And I've seen the whole evolution, Robin, because I was a very early adopter. I met my husband online 20 years ago, and I started coaching singles shortly thereafter on writing dating profiles. So I've been in the game for a minute. Mm-hmm. And what I know is that dating apps are just a tool. It's no different than knowing how to meet someone IRL. It's no different than speed dating. It's no different than asking for introductions. They are just a tool to make the connection. And there's a right way to use the tool, and then there's a really frustrating way to use the tool. And like I say in F the Fairy Tale, it's like you're trying to hammer a nail into the wall, but you're using a saw for it. And you're like, why is this not working? It's taking so long. This is so frustrating. You know what? Saws don't work. No, well, they don't work when you're using them the wrong way. And if you can just get a hammer, just understand how to use a hammer, then you're going to be like, oh, okay, this makes a lot more sense. So what I say to the people that are like, no, I cannot use dating apps, it's just one tool in your dating toolbox. It shouldn't be your only tool, but it also shouldn't be a tool that you just discard because it's unfamiliar to you or you haven't really learned how to use it effectively.
Right. And I think we're going to go into a lot of ways that we can use the apps for our advantage because you give so many ways that we can. But, you know, I love the fact that, you start about the background around like where dating is now, right? And you talk about how the changes, like 60% of adults under the age of 35, 60% now live without a spouse or a partner. In 2021, the average first marriage age reached 30 for men and 28 for women. So we're getting married later. There's way more people that are single that under the age of 35. And there's also the factors that you talk about, which have shifted big time in the fact that we're traveling way more. Technology has like overtaken our lives, right? Yeah. Like we are immersed in technology. Like most of us. And feminism has taken a front seat. So these are things that have absolutely really expanded how and why obviously dating has changed. Relationships have changed for all these reasons.
Yeah. I love that you actually read the book.
I read all the books, Simona. Of course, I do.
Okay, I see. You're right. These are all factors that I have seen impact dating today. And it's really interesting when you look at not just the raw numbers, but how they're correlated with other things that have happened in recent mm-hmm. history, like birth control, for example, being made available, and also abortion. I know it can be a divisive issue, but that is directly correlated with people choosing to marry later. And if you look at the graph of marrying age, I know there are some people listening that are like 28, 30, like that's still very young. When you really look at it, just about 50 years ago, those numbers were like 19 and 20. Mm-hmm. And it's only in the last 10 years that it started going up exponentially.
What that's 10-year difference, right? That's huge difference.
That's a huge difference. Like if you look at the graph, I wanted to put the graph in the book, but they were like, ah, it's too complicated. Just talk.
But I would have loved the graph. I'm a graph girl.
You can go look up the graph. I have it in my references. The graph is striking to look at because it's literally like steady, 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 steady. All of a sudden, it jumps up. What else happened about 10 years ago, Robin? I don't have to tell you. Online dating. Mm-hmm. Dating apps were invented, and all of these other advancements that you just mentioned have had an impact on the way that we connect and the way that we communicate and the choice that we have. That's really one of the big takeaways from this book, is to remind yourself how much choice you have in today's world when 50 years ago, women didn't have that much choice in their dating and marriage selections.
And one of the things that we just keep going back to in the dating world, dating relationship world, is the fact that having more choice can often be such a huge detriment. We're not actually, it is a problem. This isn't such a huge, it's not like, woo, we've got all the endless choice, because actually that's not the reality.
Yeah, I'm a maximizer. So I love choice. And that's why I really loved online dating. That made dating so much easier for me, because it felt like my pool went from, you know, people I met at work and friend circles and bars, which was never really, that was not my venue, to so many more compatible people anywhere throughout my city and, you know, my search radius. And even that has changed. You talked about travel, like even, and communication, having digital communication, that has expanded a lot of our circles too. So ultimately, I really do think the choice is good. However, this paradox of choice, this overwhelm that I hear about a lot, and this belief that when people have the endless swipe, they're not going to choose, which is not true. It's not true, because obviously meeting through dating apps is one of the top three ways that people meet and marry today. So people are making selections and decisions, but the challenge and the overwhelm and the paradox of choice comes up when you haven't clarified the criteria by which you are searching, that the criteria that helps you sort through all of these choices to get to the choice that is ultimately right for you.
Are you ready to take your relational skills to the next level? Join us April 12th to the 14th, 2024, for In Bloom, a love and relationship summit. Real Love Ready is putting you in the room with 10 of your favorite relationship experts, including Dr. Gabor Maté, Jillian Turecki, and Dr. Jody Carrington. Learn from the most trusted names in love with a weekend of skill building, growth, and community. Be there in person in Vancouver, BC, or join us virtually from anywhere in the world. Head to realloveready.com to learn more and secure your spot. You can use the code LOVE15 to save 15% off your tickets. I truly hope to see you there.
So let's go through the myths, because this is what you're saying. The criteria, like when we're talking about how to do, first let's go through the four myths that you talk about. And what was the basis of these common dating myths, right? Because it's steering people wrong. Like the list myth, if you've got your list, it's like you're looking, so many people are looking for the wrong thing. It's all so, it's like choosing a car. a model of car. Okay, I want this color. I want this speed. I want this, like, you know, kilometers per hour. Or, no, sorry, what was it? Gas mileage.
Kilometers, miles, whatever.
The list myth, right? The rules myth, the chemistry myth, and the soulmate myth. Can we go through those briefly? And then
yes. No. Let's start with the list myth, because that's really what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
The criteria by which you are searching. When I say that the list is a myth, I'm not saying don't have any idea what you're looking for. It's quite the opposite. It's saying, let's actually look at that list and figure out what really fits for the life that you are building. And through this book, I have realized that I have pillars of long-term compatibility that I've talked to my clients about for years that I've seen consistently add up to more successful, lasting relationships. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting as I was writing the book and I identified the myths that govern each phase of dating. Like we're talking right now about the mindset phase, the kind of preparing to date. And the list myth being the thing that gets a lot of people stuck there, I realized that these pillars that I've been talking about for years align really well with the myths as antidotes to offer people a different thing to focus on. So when we begin with shared goals, relationship goals, goals for the future, what do you want out of life? Let's plan, let's visualize when we're in this mindset phase, what do we actually want? And then we look at our list and we're like, okay, how does 6'3", you know, brown hair, tall, dark, and handsome, how does that actually add up to my specific relationship goals? It might, but it might not. And it might be a relic of a story you heard, of a prior relationship, of a family of origin, of something that doesn't necessarily belong to you, and that might be making your dating process harder.
Yes. And so, like, let's talk about this one, for instance. You talk about how, I love this one about height, because this is, when I was working as a matchmaker and dating coach, that went for women, that is on their top. It's like, I want a tall man. I mean, I'm 5'1". Do you think I'm walking around going like, I need a man that's at least 6 feet or taller? Like, I could really, I don't want, okay, like, I mean, I want a person that I don't know, maybe that's not shorter than me. And I think that's okay. But like, I am not looking for the tall person, but a lot of women are.
But first of all, you have the confidence of a much taller woman.
Hey, I'm not ashamed of my height. I'm good to go.
Well, secret reveal, Robin. I'm shrinking. I'm now 4'11 and a half. I used to be 5 feet.
So, I can't believe that. I did not know.
I know.
That tomorrow.
I'm a little thing. So tall. Tall girls, don't get mad at me for saying this, because what people will always say that is like, but you're short. How do you know? Because I'm a dating coach and because I've been doing this for 17 years.
Exactly.
And I know that the height does not correlate to long-term compatibility.
What I do know
is that it's about how you want to feel when you're with this person.
Great.
And that for some people, the height is translating to a feeling of like, oh, well, I feel uncomfortable because I'm tall. I feel uncomfortable being with a shorter guy because people are going to look at us and then it's going to be weird. And it's, you know, or it reminds me of my dad, or it reminds me of something I saw in a movie. You know, by the way, like everyone in Hollywood is, all the guys are like 5'7", 5'8", like no joke. I work in television. Yeah. I promise you, they're not tall men. So what I do in the book, I do dating math, because then I'm like, okay, now see how these choices add up to a diminished dating pool for you. Because it's like, okay, you want a guy that's six feet or taller. That's about 14.5% of the American population. I'm not sure about Canadian.
Exactly. 14.5%. Okay. That is so limiting.
6'3", 6'4". Now you're talking about 1%. That's 6'4" and taller. And the number of times that I've seen it on people's dating profiles or that people tell me that they want this when they come to me, I'm like, do you realize then when you compound that with, and he has to be more educated than I am, he has to make more money, he has to drive a certain car, he has to, you know, whatever it is, it means that your dating pool is being reduced
each time
you make those decisions. And sometimes people need to like actually see the numbers on the page to realize how they're doing it. But I think height should not be a factor at all. It's funny because I did a video on this on my Instagram not that long ago. And people were like, yeah, I hear what you're saying. I just need him to be 5'7". You know, and it's like, no, you're not hearing what I'm saying. I'm saying just need him to be all of these other qualities that make you feel loved and cared for. And yes, he's going to be the height that he's going to be.
Right. Good. Okay. So you talk about deal breakers. Okay. This was a good learning for me too. The must-haves and the deal breakers, because that's another way that people, if they've got too many deal breakers or must-haves, so what are the most important things, right? And oftentimes you're limiting your pool again by having too many deal breakers. So you're saying, okay, you can have three must-haves and one deal breaker.
Yes. So this shows up in two ways. There's just the deal breakers that you have in your mind, and we can talk ourselves out of anything. We can find a red flag for anything. So one reason that I tell my clients you get three must-haves and only one deal breaker is so that we keep that search expansive, at least in the beginning phase. Mm-hmm. And then when you meet them, then you're like, okay, compatible or not compatible. And we can talk about the myths and the pillars mm-hmm. that you'll encounter in the date phase later. But in that preparation, when you are focusing on the deal breakers, you will eliminate people from your pool unnecessarily. The other thing, and what I really highlight in the book, is how people are using deal breakers on dating apps in a way that is really, really making it harder for the dating app to work for you. So yes, a lot of the apps now, many of these are paid features, but a lot of uh-huh. the apps allow you to note what your deal breakers are. And the app is really, the algorithm was programmed before the deal breakers were a thing. So the app is really programmed to work for you maybe with one deal breaker. You get one deal breaker and it will still spit out a high number of matches for you. If you start then adding, oh, well, then this is also a deal breaker and this is also a deal breaker, then it can't compute that information. And what you don't realize is how many people have that deal breaker somewhere in some respect. Like, let's just say it's religion, right? And you're open on religion, but you've checked certain boxes, and that person maybe just said not religious. And mm-hmm. that's not actually a deal breaker for you, but the algorithm doesn't know how to read that gray area. Does that make mm-hmm. sense? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh, well, that would have been okay. I was just saying that I wouldn't be right for somebody who practices these religions. But now I am eliminating someone that could have been a match because I made a line in the sand around something that was ultimately a nuanced conversation.
Right. You give an example where you had a dating coach client who she was like, I don't have any matches. It's just this online dating thing is not working for me. It's been months and months. I've been at it. And it's just like, this is just, I'm coming up with nothing.
Yeah. she said, I don't have any matches. And I was like, I heard this a million times. I don't have any matches. I don't have any matches.
And so you went into her profile.
Yeah.
And you found that she had all these deal breakers that were checked.
Well, first right? I went to see, she actually had no matches. And I was like, oh, that's really weird. Like for me to log into an app after I think she hadn't been on for a month or two. And I'm like, you have no matches? What is going on under the hood? Well, you have six deal breakers.
Yeah.
Who is threading this gauntlet of deal breakers? There's just, and I'm not telling folks to compromise.
No, I'm just
saying, let's really, really do a hard look at what we're saying is a deal breaker. And like, I even give an example in the book, smoking. Like a lot of times people will say smoking, that's a deal breaker. I'm not a smoker. I'm not necessarily a fan of smoking, but I was like, is it really a deal breaker though? If this person is like everything that you're looking for and you're just like, well, I don't smoke. I don't really like the smell of smoke, but like, this is your person. Is it really a deal breaker? Does that add up to how you live your life? Maybe it does, because like maybe you don't want to take this person taking smoke breaks, or you don't want the smell in your house. I don't know. But I'm just saying, let's just ask what if, because there's a lot of things that we've just come to accept of like, you know, I live in California. Nobody smokes. Like, okay, so yeah, that's a deal breaker. But that's like a big assumption. That's a big leap that I'm making just based on the bubble that I live in.
Yes. I've got a really funny personal story about that, because I met my first husband while I was a smoker. This was way back when. And he said to me during our first date, like, I would never date a smoker. And I was like, me neither. And then I'm like, oh shit, I really have to quit, like immediately. So, I mean, it took me a little while of like closet smoking. This was like in my early 20s. Like I would just smoke like two or three before I having a date. And then of course, brushing my teeth, perfume. And then, okay, I'm good for the whole night. And the next morning I'm like, okay, Robin, you know, taper down. And within a couple of weeks, I quit smoking. But he never saw me smoke. He never knew I smoked. So I know, but my point is like.
But he knows now.
He does know. I told him later, I was like, I was smoking. But so that's a good, what I'm saying is like, that could have been an online situation where we may not have met if that was in his pro. And I wouldn't have said I was a smoker. But anyway, that's another thing altogether.
I love that story. I'm like, I wish I knew that story when I was writing the book, Robin, because I totally would have included it. Honestly, you just made my point, because some of these factors are also changeable. And so we're like, well, I could never, even things like distance, like I'll see people making, okay, I can't translate into kilometers, but like a five mile radius is the max.
Oh and, my gosh.
You know, in Los Angeles, of course, there's very different communities. And I understand like, there's a kind of east side, west side beef going on.
Yeah. Oh, wow. But like, that's very limiting.
If your person is literally right there, they're 5.1 miles away. And you just were like, no, not in my pool. Not even going to see them. That to me is, this is why I originally called myself a dating strategist. That's where something in your strategy is broken. And so many times, Robin, the shifts are so minute. When I'm working with a coaching client, I just get under the hood. It's kind of like taking your car to a mechanic, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know anything about cars. I'm just like, all I know is the check engine light is on. And sometimes there's something really wrong and you got to drop it off and leave it in the shop for a while. But like, it always kills me the times when it's just like, oh, we just needed to like swap that out, or this thing was a little loose or whatever, you know, it's like 15 bucks and it's fixed. And that is really my experience with so many of my clients, where I just peek under the hood and I'm like, oh, you have the deal breaker switch on. Oh, you change out your primary photo. Oh, you know, it's just a little bit of a mindset shift, or you just need to practice your flirting skills, or, you know, whatever it is. Sometimes it's a small shift that has a ripple effect and a big change overall. Most of the clients who've been through my coaching program, within 3 to 6 months from ending the program, end up in a relationship. How am I able to replicate these results for all ages, for all locations, again and again and again? One, because I'm magical and amazing. No, it's not that. It's that we are like, everyone is really this close to right. finding that relationship. And we all just, we're living with our own blinders on. We all have our own stories and belief systems. And sometimes we just need a slight rewrite to get to the ending that we want.
Right. Perfect. So you talk about the pillars. Okay. I do want to go through the pillars because these are really important. And you said it doesn't matter what, you know, or do you want to go through a few more myths? Because of course there's,
yeah, let's talk about the myths and then I'll correlate them with the pillars too.
Yes, please.
Because there are two sides of the same coin. So as we're going chronologically through, we started with mindset. Then there's the search. This is how you're finding dates. We started out sort of talking about dating apps, but I talk about all of the ways that you actually have at your fingertips to be able to expand your dating pool and quickly too. But the problem there is that everyone is in such a rush that we're going based on the rules myth, and we're going based on, we want dating hacks and we want the shortcuts. And it's just like, just tell me X, Y, Z how it's done. And this is why, you know, I was saying it's little shifts for each person, but it's not all the same shift. And so we may, like, going back to the car analogy, like if every time you took the car into the shop, they're just like, oh, you need a new carburetor. I don't even know what a carburetor does, but you know what I'm saying. Yeah. If everyone just gets a new carburetor, it's like, well, that'll fix maybe a tenth of the cars. But then there's all these other cars that are like, wait, my carburetor was fine. I actually need you to check the oil or something mm-hmm. else. So that's why the rules don't really work today. Because there's so much individuality in dating that we all have to be able to dial in our own dating strategy and be willing to go through that experience, which isn't always fun, isn't always comfortable, but is so rich in self-study and learning about ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I say tools over rules.
Yep, I like that. And this, your book is full of tools, that's for sure.
Yeah. And the antidote to the rules myth is really focusing in on your values and finding somebody who shares your values. And you can even meet people when you lean into your values in different ways beyond just the dating apps. But then you got to go on the date. And that's where the chemistry myth comes up. Mm-hmm. And so many times people write into Dates and Mates and say, well, I thought they were cute. They were great on paper, but I just didn't feel the spark. I just didn't feel the chemistry the first date. So, and I have just seen time and time again that chemistry develops over time. It cannot be told on that first date. So I coach my clients to pursue curiosity. I know we talked about this on our IG Live. Curiosity over chemistry. Curiosity is really the stuff that is an endless well. Curiosity is why I'm sitting here 20 years after meeting my husband, still excited. We're going out on a date tonight. And I'm like, I'm excited, giddy excited, like I was 20 years ago, because I'm still so curious about him. If it was just chemistry, I mean, he's also very cute and we have chemistry, but it's the curiosity that is the deeper well. And that's where the communication pillar really comes up. You have to be able to communicate. You have to be able to have conflict resolution skills. You have to really be able to express those shared goals and shared values that we were talking about earlier. But it's tough to get to the future phase of dating when we're focused on finding a soulmate. Now, I want to hear your take on this, because I get a lot of pushback on the soulmate myth.
I'm sure you do. I think that it's funny because my first company was called Locate Your Soulmate. Okay, this was like in my 20s. I'm now 46, so here we go.
Here we go.
But I've totally shifted my perspective and my view on this, because I believe wholeheartedly that we can be attracted to many, many different type of people in this world, and we can build healthy, beautiful relationships with many, many people in this world.
100%.
It's not just one person.
Yeah. And I say in the book that soulmates are made. They're not born, they're made. Yes. And you choose your soulmate every day. Mm-hmm. So this idea that there's one perfect person predestined for you out there, about 70% of people believe in soulmates. And mm-hmm. that just kills me because that's like we're just riding on hope. Hope that that person is just going to have read the same fairy tale script.
You talk about hopism. We're like hopium.
We're addicted to hopium.
Yeah, and we have to have hope, okay? Because hope fuels us for in so many different ways in our lives. And I'm dating right now, and I'm full of hope that I'm going to meet. Of course, I'm going to meet somebody. It's not even a question. I've got lots of hope, but that doesn't mean I'm not taking action, and I have to constantly bring my mindset back to, you have a really shitty date, and you're like, and actually, it's happened to me a couple times now, right? It's probably going to happen more, but it's like you got to pick yourself up. Okay, that was really crappy, and for a couple of days you're like down the dumps, but you're like, all right, getting back up here, getting back on, right?
Yeah.
Or going out with a smile and want to dress nicely, go to the grocery store and actually start conversation with people, be out there. So I'm not lost in hope. I'm actually taking, I'm taking action too.
I love hearing that. And it's also an acknowledgement that each of these experiences builds us.
Mm-hmm.
It teaches us something. I'm sure even from those crappy dates you had, you took something from it. Even if it was just like, oh, I'm not going to go out with somebody again that says XYZ, before the date or whatever it is, there's some learning in there. I'm not going to spend as much time, or I'm going to do a screening phone call before the date. There's something that you can take away from it, because that's just honestly the only way that I can process adversity, because otherwise it's just like crappy things happening, crappy dates, crappy, crappy situations. Like if we can't learn or grow from it, it's just a waste of time, and time's our most valuable resource. We're not getting any more of it. So let's use that time effectively. But if you're pursuing a soulmate myth, then it's going to prevent you from taking the action that you were just saying, and also from seeing the person when they're right there in front of us. And I get this question on dates and mates a lot too. Well, how do you know? How did you know when you met your husband? How do you know? Like, because one, slow love, and two, when you have trust, that is the ultimate pillar, which cannot be built immediately. You can't trust someone on the first date or the second date.
Gosh,
how could you trust someone? I mean, you can trust them enough for the date, but yeah, they're still a stranger. To really have the trust that relationships are built on, you have to see consistently that that person's words match their actions, that you're aligned on all of the other pillars, and that you can trust yourself, that you've aligned your actions towards the future that you want. You're never going to get like the bells going off and the angels tooting their horns from the heavens. It's never going to happen. It all boils down to a choice, a feeling, and a choice.
Yes.
And that's magical to me. That's hopeful to me. I know for some people, they're like, oh, but your boss, Drew Barrymore, when I see her movies, there's always a moment,
Yeah, that's in the movies, right?
Yeah, in the movies. But we're writing our own love stories here. And to me, that's way more empowering.
Yes. And, I love the fact that you do, because you're on the Drew Barrymore show so often, and Drew is so genuine and honest herself. And she's, she talks about her dating life, and, in the movies, she's hooking up with the right guy and it's all working out in the end. And in real life, she's dating, she's in the trenches, just like, and it's like all the ups and downs that go along with it, but that's life. So
yeah, I told her she did us dirty with all of her rom-coms, but no, she's amazing. And I love how real and raw she can be with dating. And it is a real privilege for me to be able to coach her viewers, audience members through dating and show people what this experience is in a real honest way. Because, you know, there's a lot of TV where it is glossy and perfect, and people marry the first time they've met or, you know, after a week or whatever. But I love that I get to really show people transforming on camera and also being their real authentic self, because that's what people really connect to, the authenticity. And that's what we want from others when we're out here dating.
That's right. So in the book, you go through the four types of apps. See, I didn't realize, like I said, like when I read this, I was like, oh man, I needed to know this and this and this. So there's right now, and I'm sure there's going to be more as even probably today, there's another type of app that's developed, but
there is. I'm working on one. I can't talk about it yet, but
no. But there's four types of apps.
There's going to be a new category emerging.
Okay,
new
good.
Technology today.
Good, but we have to keep up with it. And I think if we know about the types of apps that we're on, that we're joining, and how they differ, because they function differently, right?
Yes. Yes. And one of the most common questions I get is, what's the best app for? I'm a 46-year-old woman who lives here, who has... You know, usually they'll just tell me like their age and their location. They're like, "What's the best app?" And I'm like, "Don't have enough information." First of all, because it varies from place to place. It varies based on how much time you have to swipe. It varies based on the functionality that you like. It varies based on what you're looking for. So I break it all down into four types of apps that I have interacted with in my work as a dating coach. There are the legacy apps. These are like the Match.coms and the apps that have a large user base that were not built on swipe technology, that were built on longer form profiles back when online dating worked a lot better. I love... Well, I'll get into the swipe apps next, but we used to have a lot more information in the profiles, and now even the legacy apps have started reducing the amount of information in the profiles because that's what the users want. So we got what we wished for, and here we are. But they have a lot of users, so they require a lot of time to search and sort and message and all of that. Then we have the swipe apps, which prioritize ease of use. However, we don't have a lot of information to go on. So we wanted it to be really easy to create a profile. We wanted to be able to swipe through like hot or not style. This is fun. This is kind of a game. And these apps have huge huge user bases, but they also tend to have less functionality, especially less free functionality now, and it takes more time to do the sort. So really quick to make a match, really long to get to the date. Then we have curated apps. So these are the apps that they feed you a certain number of matches, like the eHarmonies or the Coffee Meets Bagel, where it's not an endless swipe. It's you fill out this questionnaire. We kind of know who you are and what you're looking for. Here are the people who we believe are right for you. These are better for folks that don't want to spend a lot of time swiping, or maybe if you're new to online dating and you're afraid you might get overwhelmed by a swipe app like Tinder or Bumble, that's a good option for you. And then there are the niche apps. These are the ones like JDate or Farmers Only.
I'm sure there's something for Christian Mingle, right?
Christian Mingle, where you already know that the people there meet a certain criteria that you're looking for. So these are sort of the values-based searches. And I was talking about, you know, finding your community of people, you already go to that community, but the challenge is there's a smaller pool. So sometimes if people have been accustomed to the swipe apps or the legacy apps, they're like, where is everybody? Well, we kind of already had the deal breaker laid down. So now everyone here meets your criteria, but there aren't as many options for you to sort through. So right. It's really just about ultimately figuring out which app is right for you right now by deciding which app you like the matches on and you like the functionality of. And that's
right. Yeah. So, but you know, you do suggest that people be on more than one app, not at the same time, right?
Depending.
But for the functionality, because I'm on Hinge, which, because I was like, well, I don't know. I think it'll be good. It's my first time online dating in forever, in a very, very long time. And, but I do think what I'm finding is that the limited information, like I want way, like, you know, the one sentence I like hiking and fishing. I'm like, yeah, I see that from your pictures. You're hiking and or in the gym, all the guys with their picture of them. That's another thing altogether, but all the gym pictures, please guys, there has to be more than a picture of you in the mirror with your workout clothes on. I mean, we all work out. Most of us do. Come on.
I'm actually, yeah, I'm going to be doing some videos about that too on my Instagram.
It's so tacky. But it's not necessary.
Hinge is an interesting case because it's sort of a hybrid of a couple different.
Yeah,
because there's a little more information than the swipe apps. It's not a swipe app. It doesn't have the swipe technology. It's not a legacy app, really, and it's not really curated, and it's definitely not niche. So it kind of lives in an in between space. I like that you have to queue off of something specific. But I still feel like, as you said, it is very thin on information. And that's why I have this whole chapter in F the Fairy Tale about the texting trap and how to DM and text effectively, because it's a step now in the dating process and you have to be able to get from the match on the app to the actual date. But some people can tolerate more than one app at a time. I find a lot of times, especially today, people get overwhelmed. So I say now, I actually introduced this on the Drew Barrymore show, to do what I call cycling, where you're yes. on one app for 3 to 4 weeks, then you cycle to the next, then you cycle back to the first, so that you're always seeing fresh matches. But again, that's based on the prerequisite that you like the matches on the app and you like the functionality. You're not dreading it. Like, I don't want you on an app if you're like, ugh, I have to sign into Tinder again. I hate
yes,
it. You know,
exactly. And these are like the worst matches and whatever. No, then choose a different app, right? Because there are choices.
There are so many apps out there. And we tend to just kind of go to the same three apps. But there are a lot of app options. Some of them, there's also like an approval process. So, you know, don't get discouraged if you're not on it like right away. Like, we tend to want it now. It's just like, okay, I need a date now. I'm just going to sign up now. And we have a glass of wine and we sloppily write our bios, a couple pictures. And then we're like, why isn't it happening now? But let's take a more mindful approach, because then the results you're going to get will align more with your expectations and will be a little bit more mindful as well.
Yeah. So you answer so many of your client questions that you in the book, which we all have these same questions. So there's a question in the book around, like, what do you think about dating more than one person at a time?
I say yes and.
Yes.
With the caveat that both people are on the same page. I think the assumption is that you're dating multiple people until it is proven otherwise.
Right.
And if you and the person you're dating haven't had the conversation that you're exclusive, you should just assume you're not exclusive. And this is a change from, you know, 20 years ago. I know there are a lot of people that come to dating apps fresh from, like, maybe having never use the apps, having not been single in the modern era of dating. And also it does vary from country to country too. Mm-hmm. Like I used to find for clients in the UK about, I don't even like 6 or 7 years ago, the assumption was you're exclusive until you say that you're going to date other people. And that has, in the US, that has not been the norm for a long time.
Yes. I quoted this. I wrote this down because I just love this. Because it's about dating. You talk so much about this, about dating, like you said, with curiosity and dating with purpose. Dating with purpose is not about how many people you can get to pursue you. It's about getting to a more honest place about who you are and how you want to live your life. Remember, it takes only one person to turn your relationship reality around. So try not to get too invested in any one match when you send that first message, because I think we get so invested in the online dating process too. You're just, because we're in this hopium. Is it hopium?
Hopium.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Because, right? And you're like, okay, this is it. This is the guy, right? And then you message and you're like so invested in this person and maybe they don't message you back, or maybe you're messaging a couple of times and then all of a sudden dead in the water, like gone, right? Which like this happens all the time. Okay. But you say, treat those messages, I love this, and matches like coins in a fountain. If you toss in a penny and your wish comes true, that's a beautiful blessing. But if it doesn't, are you really going to be disappointed over a penny? Toss more pennies, make more wishes. And the ones that are meant to come true will. Oh, Damona, I loved that. Like you want to be in it. You want to be spending your energy and your time in it, but you also have to just treat this as in like, yeah, it's, don't take it personally. You don't know this person, right? Until you meet them in person. That's the other thing.
Yeah. It's rarely personal until right. It is, but you know, it, especially in the beginning, as you said, it's rarely personal. And I recognize what I'm asking folks to do is a hard thing.
Yeah.
To not internalize that, to not make it about you, because it feels very personal when you're like, I got ghosted. What did I do wrong? Maybe nothing. Right. Maybe nothing. They were already talking to somebody else and they started to just kind of feel a pull towards that person. They felt kind of guilty. They were keeping another conversation going and they didn't know how to end it. And they didn't have the tools because they didn't read F the fairy tale. They don't know. So they made a choice that was hurtful to you. And that's not okay, but it's also not yours to carry.
Right.
So if we can adopt that more coins in the fountain mindset, then you can sustain. Like what I'm trying to get people to do is to weather the dating storm. Like I have certain guidelines in the book. I know I said tools over rules. I have certain guidelines about like giving it 3 dates
and keeping the first date short.
Keeping the first date short, setting a limit, a drink limit. Like we established we're little women here.
Yeah.
I cannot hold my liquor, Robin. I cannot. I know this about myself. If I have more than one drink, I'm not going to make the best decisions. If I have more than 2 drinks, my whole next day is ruined. And I have just never seen someone date from the best place when they're at that state. And so for someone listening, that might be 2 drinks, that might be 4 drinks. I don't know, maybe it could be 6 drinks depending on your lifestyle habits. I don't know. You know what that number is. But setting those guidelines is really important. Now, I will admit to you, when I met my husband, I had 2 drinks. I did. And it's not that I broke my rule. It's that I had the rule in place so that I could go through all of those frogs to get to the prince, right? Because if I had been having 2 drinks with everyone, I wouldn't have known that this was different. If I'd had 2 drinks with everyone, I might have gotten caught up in my feelings and I might have made some bad dating decisions that I wasn't proud of or whatever it is. I needed the longevity of that dating process to be able to be in the right place at the right time with the right person.
Yeah. Well, Dimona, I love talking to you. I can't believe our time, when the time goes, it goes so fast with you because it's just, it's so great. And this book, like I said, we just scratched the surface because it's so, like you talk a lot about dating, like getting off the app and how are you going to navigate the dating? Okay, the texting part, that's a huge piece of the book. And then you've got the dating. And then you've got, of course, being in the relationship and the conflict resolution strategies. But let's just, even just going back to the dating part, I think what you also talk about, which you already mentioned in our conversation, is slow love. We're in a fast-paced world, and everything, we try to do it all in a day, and getting on the apps, and it's like, it's almost, it can be addictive, right? It's just like, you just want to get the swipe, and it's like, okay, who's next? But I think we just got to slow down, be more mindful, and be thoughtful about how are you going to message this person? Because actually they do seem pretty interesting in their profile. I would like to have a good conversation over text. Let's see, ask some good questions, be curious, possibly get to the first date. When you arrive, you're going to be present and curious and listen. I love the fact that you've got coaches that help people that like, they're like mock dating. Yeah. You're giving them mock dates and like teaching people how to listen rather than talk so much. Right?
To practice this. Yes.
Yeah. But bottom line is it's about taking it slow, because the other thing you emphasize so much in your book is making the choice on who you're going to partner with is one of the most important decisions of your life. And I think we have to remember that. And 100%. This is not something to take lightly or to rush into. Right? So
it is. It is. It's so funny to me that this is the most important decision you'll ever make. And yet it's the decision that a lot of people leave to chance.
Right.
Why wouldn't we do this strategically? Like, you literally make a list to go to the grocery store. You know, you make plans for everything else in your life. And then you get to love and you're like, I just want it to happen magically. No, I don't want it to just happen magically. I want to make a really slow and thoughtful selection. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. So I invite your listeners to do that, to go on that journey with me.
And I invite everybody, I'm holding up your book again so that people can see the cover, because it's I love how it's so bright and happy. And the name is F the Fairy Tale. But really, the subtitle is Rewrite the Dating Myths and Live Your Own Love Story. So I'm going to close our conversation with a blessing based on all of the learnings that I received from Dimona Hoffman this week. May we F the fairy tale by releasing the dating and relationship myths that have been instilled in us so that we can date from a place of curiosity, joy, and presence. May we treat the people that come across our dating path with kindness, respect, and empathy. You talk a lot about empathy in the book. And may we create our own love stories that are based on shared values, shared vision for the future, on trust, and a relationship growth mindset. So thank you, Dimona Hoffman.
Robin, that was absolutely beautiful. Thank you for that blessing. I feel so heard and seen and inspired, and I hope everybody else listening does too. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, sweetheart. It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for listening. Visit realloveready.com to continue learning with us. Please rate and review this podcast. Your feedback helps us get you the tools and guidance you need to form more loving relationships and create positive change in your life. We at Real Love Ready acknowledge and express gratitude for the Coast Salish people, the stewards of the land on which we work and play, and encourage you to take a moment to acknowledge and express gratitude for those that have stewarded and continue to steward the land that you live on as well. Many blessings and much love.